American soprano Nadine Zverev released just a month ago, There's a Place for Us, her debut album on Deutsche Grammophon, which she performs along with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra with Robert Spano conducting. A native of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, she trained at the Mann's College of Music and Marilyn Horne's Music Academy of the West, and notched along the way from there to now so many awards, where she was often the youngest person ever to receive them. She appeared at the United States Supreme Court building in Helsinki, Finland, on the Marilyn Horne Mediterranean cruise to Italy, Croatia, Turkey, and Greece, at the Musashino Hall, Tokyo, Japan, the New Victory Theater, Palm Beach, Boston, San Francisco, Venice, La Scala, Milan, the Metropolitan Opera, New York, Dallas, under the Eiffel Tower, the Opera Nationale de Paris, and in Berlin. Some listeners may have heard her performances some years back on From the Top. Nadine Sierra is featured in the book Driven, Six Incredible Music Journeys, where author Nick Romero dedicated one of the chapters, Journeys, to her. Nadine Zverev comes to us today from Argo Studios in New York City. Welcome to Radio KUCI, Nadine.
Hi there.
Hello.
Well, thank you for that biography.
Oh, please. Thank you for giving it to us. So congratulations on an exceptional work of art, Nadine. Here you take the baton and make the case for all of us to be hopeful in very challenging times. Would you tell us a bit about how this whole project came into being, as you say, a positive message you offer in the most general sense?
Yes, ma'am. Well, this idea came to my head about 2.5 years ago, when I was, you know, being scouted by Deutsche Grammophon and also Universal and asked what I wanted my debut album to be. And sort of the trend in the opera industry today is young sopranos coming out with bel canto, mostly bel canto albums, showcasing maybe 10 to 15 arias that they have done a lot in their repertoire and for their young ages. And, you know, the pretty photo in the front and this kind of thing. And I'm not a person to really follow many trends, and I certainly didn't want to follow that trend. I wanted the album to be more than just about myself as a singer, but also maybe make it a project about what are the issues concerning people today, and how can those issues be slightly relieved through music. And so I've told this story a little bit, but I'll tell you now. I was at a gym here in New York, and a woman sort of said, she kind of used a name at me in a sort of racist kind of way. She called me Consuela, and I was a little surprised by that, because I had never had that experience before, but I knew why she felt so brave to call me this name, because a certain person at that time was running in the presidential elections, and I think she kind of felt emboldened by his messages and his ideas of people who are different than himself. And I kind of had this, I don't think I was the only one, I sort of had this premonition that should this person run our country, these kinds of messages, negative messages, in my opinion, would probably become a bit stronger as time went on. And that for me was very dangerous and very scary. Coming from a Portuguese mother, Puerto Rican and Italian grandparents, I'm very, very much against that idea of separation and shunning people just because of where they come from, because that for me is what being an American is all about. We're all from different walks of life and from different parts of the world. And that gave me the idea or sort of the push to make the album just about that, that no matter where you come from, no matter your race, your heritage, your financial situation, educational situation, whatever it may be, that there is a place for the listener. Hence the title of the album, There's a Place for Us. And I hope that this album can be that message for people when they do listen to it, that helpful reminder that there is a place for you. So yeah, that was my hope, and I'm glad that it's finally out there in the world.
Oh, indeed. And Nadine Sierra, the connections you make with the composers, could you tell us a little bit about that, starting with your acquaintance and your exposure to Leonard Bernstein?
Yes, of course. So I actually live on the same block that Leonard Bernstein used to live.
Goodness.
Yes. He lived in the Dakota Building on 72nd and Central Park West, and I live on 72nd between Columbus and Central Park West. So his old building is just a few steps away from mine. And when I was concocting the repertoire for this album, we did want to highlight an American composer who was having sort of a celebration on the year that it would be released. And my album was released on August 24th of this year, whereas Leonard Bernstein's birthday was August 25th. So, and also this year is his centennial year, his 100th year, and a lot of people around the world have been celebrating this great composer. And for me, I don't just celebrate him because of his genius as a musician, conductor, pianist, but also because he also used his platform, his artistic platform, to be a social and humanitarian activist. And he even used his platform, let's say, in a time in the United States where these issues were even more prevalent in the 1950s, and people's lives were really, really deeply affected by what was going on. And I just admire him because he didn't care. You know, he just risked his career and his reputation for what he knew was more important: the well-being and the freedom of people. And I kind of want to do the same with my artistry. I don't just want to be an opera singer singing on a stage. I want to use my artistic influence, if I have any, I want to use it for people in need and people who kind of feel like they don't have a voice, or they'll ever have a voice for themselves or for their families, their friends, for their people. And that's why I used Leonard Bernstein very much in my album, because he was a fighter for that as well. He was a musical warrior, as I like to say, and I would love to classify myself as one too.
Right. And he spanned the genres, and it sort of did. It led to, as you said, it put him out there. It led to some criticism of whether or not,
yes,
he could be taken seriously. And
exactly,
the longevity, and that anybody could whistle on the street, sing to our children as we're nursing them to sleep, and with any of those passages, he stood the test of all the criticism. Well, I wanted to find out too, briefly, well, so what was the reaction from his successors? What did the Bernstein family members, how did they react to your recordings?
Well, I did speak to Jamie Bernstein when I was first organizing the album. She and I, we were talking about repertoire, and she had actually sent me some of her own compositions, which are actually really beautiful. She sent them to me via email. We had lunch together also with some members of the Universal team, and she seemed to be very, very positive about what I wanted to do and what my project was about. And I also just saw her very recently at the Tanglewood celebration on Leonard Bernstein's birthday, August 25th of this year. She was there, and we took a photo together, and she was just beaming with pride and I think joy at the fact that so many people, not just me, but all the people who had attended, were celebrating her father and also celebrating his message, especially today, as you said, when I think this kind of positive message is so crucial.
So There's a Place for Us is the title of the debut album, as well as the opening track. I think we'll let what you've already said speak to what you're capturing there. I would like to sort of break it down in a, I'm not going to, spoiler, there's no spoiler alert needed. Every listener has to hear every single piece that you performed on this album. I'd like, in moving into Take Care of This House, also a composition by Leonard Bernstein, it begs a question. I'm sure you've been asked this over and over again. I hope it's not, you're not exhausted from it, but which houses were you considering? What voices were you channeling with that particular piece?
Actually, you're the first person who is asking me this question, and I'm so happy that you actually kind of caught it. It's about the White House. That is what this song is about. And at least for me, also, that's what it's about, and it's about taking care of what that building is supposed to represent, and what that building, in a way, who it's supposed to protect. All kinds of people, I think, in my mind, it is supposed to protect. And it's supposed to protect the American idea that I feel still exists today, that America is a place for all kinds of people. It should be. And it should only be welcoming all kinds of people, because that's what makes up America. We are people from all walks of life and all around the world. And to use that power, that responsibility in a negative way and to separate people, I think is completely wrong. And so this is what that song is about. It's about taking care of not only the building itself, but what the building is supposed to represent. And that's why I chose that song.
You know, Nadine, I heard one other house in that composition, Mother Earth.
Yes, that as well. Yeah.
So I would like for you to talk about connections that you made with Villa-Lobos' aria. Now that we know that your background, there are family members that this calls to, connections from coast to coast, shoreline to shoreline, and the language that you sing this. What would you want to convey to us, the listeners, in advance of other people getting a chance to hear this haunting and unbelievably beautiful rendering?
Oh, thank you. Well, my mother is Portuguese. She's from Lisbon. She immigrated to the States when she was 18 years old. And she was really the one, when I was 6 years old, she was the one who gave me the chance to take voice lessons. She would listen to me sing all the time and knew I had this yearning and longing for singing. So we made this rule together that she would support me with my voice lessons every single week if I practiced every single day for an hour every day, which I did. And then when I was 10 years old, she introduced opera to me, and then began supporting my idea of becoming an opera singer, which she still does today. So if it hadn't been for my Portuguese mother, I really wouldn't even be speaking to you, honestly. We wouldn't have this introduction, and I wouldn't probably have made this album. It was because of her influence and her even cultural knowledge that I even got into the art form and was able to do it. So with Villa-Lobos being a Brazilian composer and writing this beautiful music, I always want to dedicate music to my mother, to my heritage. And some of this music also is kind of lost in the classical music industry. There isn't a lot of Villa-Lobos that is performed, and I regularly use his music in recitals and concert settings because it's so beautiful and should be listened to and should be celebrated, but it's also tributing to my mother, to my background, and to the fact that without her and without that cultural difference, I wouldn't have the kind of life, and I wouldn't be able to share the kind of life that I have with others.
Nadine, I want to find out, in producing that particular piece, Tell us, tell me, whose idea was that haunting last note off in the distance?
That last note, it's a high note, yeah? And I'm humming.
Yes.
Humming a high note. Yes, it's Villa-Lobos. So he concocted the first section of the Bacchanas, the aria section of it, to first be with a vocalese, then having the Brazilian text in the middle of the piece, and then at the very end, he wanted the singer to be humming along with the eight celli. And he wrote in the score this, I believe it's an A, a hummed A up there. And it's supposed to be suspended like that while the celli sort of finish off in their sort of string section. And that's how he wrote it. And I think it's so beautiful. And the only person actually I ever listened to singing this same piece was Bidu Sayão. She made a beautiful Brazilian, she was a Brazilian soprano. She made this beautiful album at some point with a lot of Brazilian folk music, as well as including Villa-Lobos and including the Bacchanas. And she was the one who really inspired me to kind of sing it in that way, especially humming up there, which is not the easiest thing, but with a few takes, we hopefully got it right. And that's the finished product, what you hear.
Yes. Oh, it's wonderful. I would also, with the what we have time remaining, I'd like to ask or weigh in about Osvaldo Golijav. I've not heard Lua Descolorida that you performed. It's the first time, as I was saying, it just reduced me to a pile. I don't think I want anybody else to perform it. It seemed so definitive. That was, you really own that. It's just remarkable rendering there.
Oh, thank you so much. He is a composer I actually met. I went to his house.
Oh.
I went in Cambridge, and I drove there from New York, actually, because he was going to have a project with the Met. And
yes.
And he was very, very sweet. Yeah. And we were talking about his musical ideas and just him as a composer, his life, everything. And when I was creating the repertoire list, I thought it would be very nice to include him because he is a living composer who also immigrated to the United States and was composing in the United States, especially for Dawn Upshaw. He composed a lot of music for her and she recorded a lot of his music. As well as this song that you're talking about, she was the first one to record it, and I kind of wanted to take it off of her and record it a second time, not only because it's so beautiful, but also because I've met him and respect him very much as a musician, and it's, as you say, it's really a hauntingly beautiful piece of music that I think I'll keep in my repertoire forever.
Oh, absolutely. Well, where might be the optimal place to perform this live? And will you be coming to Southern California anytime soon?
I'm not coming to Southern California, but I am coming to San Francisco next year in the fall. I'm doing an opera there. I don't think I can say what yet because they haven't announced their season yet, so I'm not allowed to say. But I am going to be in San Francisco, and hopefully I can do a concert with these songs from the album. I think that would be a great idea. It just has to be something that is organized. But yeah, that would be the perfect time to do something like that.
Well, thank you, Nadine Sierra, for sharing such maximal artistry and for your time today.
Aw, thank you so much.
My guest is Nadine Sierra, as she's a Universal Music Group artist, and just out with her debut album, There's a Place for Us, released, as I said, just a month ago on Deutsche Grammophon. She performs along with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra with Robert Spano. Happy birthday again to Lenny Bernstein, and thank you, Paul Rest Engineering, today's interview.